me.
Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Our engineer is Steve Nolan. Today, we're going to take a look at the War of Terror, the one that began in 1914. The drug war has shown itself to be a cash cow, a means whereby rights are often short-circuited, where drugs are sometimes planted or stolen, and all too often lives destroyed over minor amounts of drugs. In an ever-increasing fashion, the drug war shows itself to be a corrupt cesspool that has no chance of ever succeeding. We've been hyping drug prohibition as the answer to our nation's problems for decades on end. The hypocrisy of these failed policies is evident to all but those whose mortgage payments demand that this war continue. To continue our discussion on the two wars destined to last for eternity, we bring in our guest for the evening, a man who reports on the failings of the U.S. drug policy in Central and South America, the publisher of Narconews.com, Mr. Al Giordano. If you would, just introduce yourself to my listeners, Al.
Sure. This is Al Giordano of Narco News.
Al, you follow on the ground, if you will, what's going on in Central and South America, and you see what's happening up here in North America, Canada, and the U.S. in particular, in regards to medical marijuana. How is that impacting what's going on down south?
Well, certainly what's going on in Canada is having a great impact. Canada is a member of the Organization of American States, and most Latin American countries are very appreciative that back in April of 2002, when a United States-sponsored coup d'etat, a military takeover, was attempted in Venezuela, Canada was one of the countries that led the way to oppose that coup d'etat. And so there's a lot of goodwill toward Canada. There's a feeling that Canada is finally developing the backbone to stand up to the impositions of United States policies. And so I think that the fact that Canada moves so rapidly toward medical marijuana is very positive. I know that most of the developments are covered in the Spanish language and in the Portuguese language press in the case of Brazil. And so the extent people see that a country can stand up to the impositions of another country, that of course encourages others to do the same. We recently reported at Narconews.com that there's now medical marijuana legislation filed in Argentina. And we have an upcoming report in the next couple of weeks that's going to surprise a lot of people about very fast progress toward medical marijuana in another country. But I'll leave that a mystery for now.
Earlier today, we had a show where we had a panel discuss the comparison between the war on drugs and the war of terror. And how does that play out in Central and South America?
They're both pretexts for other agendas, just like the so-called war on communism was. Basically, that's the matrix out of which these two wars come from. And Latin America has suffered on all three fronts. But none of them have anything to do with what they say they're about. The drug war is not about stopping drugs, and the terror war is not about stopping terror. It's about squashing dissent. It's about making sure that the super rich stay in power and that anybody who rises to criticize them is now called a terrorist or is called a narco or it was formerly called a communist. This is a very base, simple way that North American leaders have used to brainwash and hypnotize their own people with, I add, the support of the mass commercial media. And it doesn't fly down here at all. People see right through it. What's amazing to us is that there are so many people inside the United States that don't see through it.
Yes, Al, it's, they have the commercials here trying to show pot smokers as somehow enabling terrorists on the television. They are trying every way possible to, I guess, justify the continuation of the drug war.
By tying it to, a, quote, more legitimate war, the War of Terror?
Well, about a week after September 11th, 2001, I wrote a series on Narco News about this very theme, about how the so-called War on Terror is going to be interlinked with the so-called War on Drugs, and that's certainly what's happened, most visibly in Colombia, where now you hear the talk from people like Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld or even Colin Powell, who are now saying that any national liberation movement is not only terrorist but also narco. And really both statements are not the truth.
Al, as I understand it, a gentleman last name Castaña, I believe, recently stated that yes, they have been involved in extortion, kidnap, murder, and drug smuggling, but they're going to straighten up and fly right real soon.
Well, that's Carlos Castaño. He's the head of the right-wing paramilitaries in Colombia, and they're the ones that have operated with support from the Colombian military and from the United States government and from United States banks, as we've documented on Narco News, who've laundered their drug profits for them. Yes, they very truly are terrorists, and they are narco traffickers, but the interesting thing is they're the ones who get the support of the state. The United States government calls them a terrorist organization, but then looks the other way as United States taxpayers' money is going to protect them as they conduct their campaign of terror, of massacres of the civilian population, including women, elders, and children, and of basically saying that anybody who is not on the side of the super capitalist point of view is a terrorist. They are the shock troops of state-sponsored terrorism, and the United States government continues to look the other way.
Al, let me ask you, in regards to this suit that Betamax had against you, why don't you tell my listeners a bit about that situation?
Well, we won. Banamex, the National Bank of Mexico, which is now part of Citibank, did sue us back in 2000 for publishing true stories, as the court concluded, about narco-trafficking activities on the coastal Mexican properties of the bank's owner, or former owner, Roberto Hernandez Ramirez, who is now a director of Citibank, or Citigroup. We went through about a year and a half of legal wranglings with them, and in the end, the New York State Supreme Court ruled that that they'd throw the case out of court, that Narco News and all Internet journalists, by extension, now for the first time, have the same First Amendment rights as the New York Times or any other commercial media outlet. So it was a big victory not only for us and for our survival, but for everybody who tries to report the truth on the Internet.
And I say thank you, sir. Al, I want to ask you something. There is a movement, if you will, in the South and Central American countries to legitimize the native use of coca for the sundry purposes they have. Would you talk about that?
Well, it's been legitimate for thousands of years. I mean, there's plenty of historical documentation that the coca leaf has been chewed as a medicine, as a religious sacrament, and as a food source because it has many vitamins and minerals among the Andean peoples in Bolivia, in Peru, and in Colombia for millennia. So it's never been illegitimate in the eyes of the people, but what's happening now is the people are getting fed up with being delegitimatized and attacked by the governments in this stupid policy. To attack the coca leaf because you don't like cocaine hydrochloride is like attacking grapes because they can be made into wine. It's absolutely absurd. You can't make any comparison between the two. The coca leaf has 14 different alkaloids, each of which that counteracts against the effects of the others, has many vitamins and minerals. It's no more intoxicating than a cup of coffee. In fact, from my experience, because I've sampled it, I would say it's less intoxicated than a cup of coffee. But you see, they want to stamp out the leaf, not because laboratory technicians and narcos can make it into cocaine hydrochloride, which is the stuff that gringos sniff up their noses, but rather because they want to have an excuse to stamp down the social movements, the indigenous movements, the peasant farmer movements in these countries that are gaining strength. I'll give you an example. In June of 2002, the people of Bolivia came very close to electing Evo Morales, the leader of the coca growers of the Chapare region, as president. He came in second, and there was a runoff election in Congress between him and Gonzalez de Lozada, who's the president now. And his force in the Congress has been the strongest bloc and has prevented a lot of the kinds of impositions that normally happen in these countries down here when these neoliberal, you know, free market parties get elected. And they've also put the brakes seriously on the U.S.-imposed drug war all over the country of Bolivia. They've done this the democratic way, the American way, really, fair and square, at the ballot box. And, of course, people want to say that's terrorism. No, that's democracy. That's voting.
When you think of the ramifications of the U.S. policy, what they do to these farmers down in Central and South America to eliminate the coca, what else happens to these people?
Well, the worst thing is being done in Colombia, where a campaign of aerial fumigation has already sprayed via airplane or helicopter so many tons of glyphosate, of a very toxic herbicide, over about 14% of the landmass of the nation of Colombia. And, of course, this has been documented to have serious effects not only on the health of people, especially children, and of animal herds, you know, that ranchers have, but of food crops. And so what happens is tens of thousands of farmers are being displaced from their farms. They're becoming refugees. Some are joining the guerrilla. Others are fleeing into refugee camps in nearby Ecuador. And, of course, the coca plant, which is one of the easiest things to grow, every time one plant gets destroyed, they just plant two or three more. And so the amount of coca, we have a very interesting analysis published a couple months ago on Narco News by an author in Colombia who found that all the statistics that are used by the governments to say there's less coca being grown in Colombia now than there was before the spraying are bogus. That's not the case. In fact, all this does is spread coca growing into more and more regions and makes it more dispersed and therefore gives them a pretext to go in and do aerial spraying over all these other places, too. In Bolivia and Peru, where the governments do not allow, to their credit, herbicide spraying from the air, they try to eliminate the plants by hand labor. They go in with military troops, and as Jeremy Bigwood, one of our correspondents, recently uncovered using the Freedom of Information Act, he found in documents of the United States government that, for example, they'll put 1,600 troops into this one little region of Bolivia to try to eradicate coca plants. Half of them go with a sickle or a sword in the hand to cut down the plants, and the other half stand there with semi-automatic weapons to protect the ones who are cutting down the plants, because the local populations come. The local populations don't have guns or anything like that, but sometimes they get mad enough to throw rocks or something like that, and of course, different confrontations happen there. It also is a wide excuse in places like Bolivia to imprison political dissidents who participate in these marches, mostly peaceful marches, against the eradication of the plant. And, for example, in recent years, more than 1,800 Bolivians have been thrown into jail for participating in these marches.
When you stop and think about the enormous corruption that goes on here in the U.S., police captains helping to guard cocaine shipments and so forth, and then I hear from Mexico that they're busting this cartel or the head of that cartel. Are we doing anything to disrupt the criminals in their pursuit of these selling these drugs?
No. A lot of this is media hype. They talk about cartels. What is a cartel? If you look it up in the dictionary, a cartel is an organization like OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting States, which has enough of a monopoly over the production of petroleum that they can set the price and determine the price of the product. What they call the drug cartels don't have that kind of power to set and determine the price of the product. What determines the price is the level of government repression. And what happens is the cartels, or let's call them organizations, they're more like teamsters. They're the transportation guys. They deliver the product from one end to the other, and they bribe the public officials to let it over the border. That's their job. They don't make even 20% of the profits. 80% of the profits goes to the big bankers and money launderers, people who wear suits and ties, mostly in the United States and Europe, I might add, people who give money to the Democratic Party and to the Republican Party, people who get invited to the finest parties and whose daughters and sons' weddings are on the social pages in the biggest newspapers. These are the real narco cartels. But, of course, they're not going to tell you that in the commercial media in the United States. So they focus on groups of Mexicans or groups of Colombians before that, saying, oh, these are the drug lords. These are the ones who are running the drug trade. That's total bull. These certainly they're criminals, they're mafias, but they're not cartels, they're not all-powerful, and they're not making even the majority of the money. What happens is one group, let's say it's based in Tijuana, is competing with another group, let's say it's based in the city of Juarez, to deliver the product into the United States. They have a competition between them. So they go to their corrupt cops and give the information to go get the other team. And the majority of big arrests you see and big seizures you see are either because one narco-trafficker is informing on another, or one narco-trafficker feels that someone in his own organization is getting too big for his britches and turns him in, because there's always power struggles within these groups. The police, of course, are in on this deal because it allows them to show that they're fighting a war on drugs, that they're seizing record amounts of cocaine and other drugs. And this, of course, allows them to go to the legislators and to the presidents and get more money for their wasteful bureaucracies. And so it's a big dance. It's a big phony game. The United States government, no government on this earth, is serious about fighting narco-trafficking. And even if they were, they would not succeed. The only solution is to legalize and regulate drugs, and you will get rid of all these so-called cartels in one fell swoop.
Yes, Al, that's so true. I think about it. I've heard it said that if, you know, the use of drugs goes down, it shows they're being successful, give us more money. If the use of drugs goes up, it means they really need to get busy, give us more money.
Right.
Okay, we're going to take just a little break here. We'll be back in a few moments with Al Giordano of NarcoNews.com. And please stay tuned. Following our interview with Mr. Giordano, we will announce our hero of the week, U.S. Congressman Ron Paul.
The drug war and the war on terrorists, in many ways, they're very similar, and of course, Ashcroft is involved in both. They provide the same kind of danger, and I wouldn't be surprised if the motivation for both might not be the same, and that is, yes, it's convenient to have a war on drugs because that way they can make an excuse for doing so many of these snooping type of things that they do. And terrorism just gives them another excuse. The approach of having this drug war and criminalizing everything and throwing people in jail and creating prices to skyrocket, it's actually, you know, about the nuttiest thing we've done since Prohibition.
I had an occasion to speak to Dr. Jeffrey Guy, the executive chairman of GW Pharmaceuticals in Great Britain, and I mentioned that the U.S. government still thinks that cannabis causes death.
These are, in pharmaceutical terms, very safe materials. They are of low organ toxicity. They're very well tolerated by humans. That has been witnessed by many, many thousand years of human coexistence and ingestion of these materials.
Dr. Guy will be our guest next week on Cultural Baggage.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of DrugSense. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to the Drug Truth Network. My name is Dean Becker. Our guest for this evening is Al Giordano, the publisher of Narco News. You're listening to KPFT, Houston, 90.1 FM, Pacifica Radio. All right, Al Giordano.
You see it, hear it from the people on the ground. You have reporters who are able to validate the truth when what we hear usually is a regurgitation from some ambassadorial staff. Is that correct?
Well, yes. A lot of the commercial correspondents in Latin America for the major U.S. Media outlets, you know, they're under a lot of pressure to be in with the local embassy, to have sources, to be able to get comment in the middle of the night from, you know, the ambassador or his functionary. And so, you know, the embassies down here know that game, and this is how they play it. If you're Al Giordano or Luis Gomez from Narco News, well, they won't talk to you because they know that they can't control you. Chances are, if any embassy official gives an on-the-record quote to a reporter, that means that at least the embassy official thinks that that reporter is going to do as he's told. And actually, it's very interesting. You can kind of tell who the weak reporters are because they're the ones who always get the official quotes.
I think about the situation with cultural baggage. I've tried everybody from John Ashcroft on down to the local DEA agent. Can't get one person to come on the show.
Right. The first sign that somebody is not doing their job is that they can get these powerful bureaucrats to appear on their programs or to get the or to give them quotes. That's, I mean, people, you know, news readers, we the people have to become much more discerning when we read the media. We have to learn how to read between the lines. And here's the first clue. If you have a quote from the embassy, it's because the embassy thinks that you're carrying their water for them. Now, there are occasional exceptions to this, but those people usually get cut off pretty fast. For the most part, the United States Press Corps is a bunch of careerist, people without any social conscience, without any devotion or passion for what the First Amendment is or for what freedom of the press is, and they're just like any other functionary in government or private industry. That's why we talk about at Narco News authentic journalism. That's why we founded the Narco News School of Authentic Journalism. That's why we work with more than 20 correspondents from throughout Latin America, and you can just look over the pages of narconews.com and see the quality of these people, mostly young people, who are 10 times the journalists as anyone the New York Times has ever sent down here.
Al, I want to ask you, if you will, to give us a bit of the history as you see it. Are things changing? Is there an impetus towards reform?
Most certainly. I'd say it's moving faster in Latin America than it is inside the United States. Although I must give a tip of the hat to the medical marijuana movement in the United States, particularly in California, that's fought a very valiant battle. And of course, we've tried to support them here at Narco News, too, under the logic that, well, we cover Latin America, but from, you know, California to Texas, that used to be part of Mexico, too. And so we have offered it some coverage. But, of course, a lot of other media is offering very good coverage to that as well. And we think that's swell. But in terms of outright legalization, it is moving faster down here. The current presidents of Mexico, of Uruguay, and of Brazil have all spoken in favor of decriminalization of drugs. In Brazil, the biggest country, it's a very interesting situation where not only the president, but his attorney general, his top war on crime czar, and even now his drug czar, who traditionally has been a real hawk on the issue, an Ashcroft type, is now starting to loosen his discourse and saying, well, yes, we do need a legalization debate. One of our correspondents, Renato Rovai, recently reported this. It's on this issue of Narco News that you can find online now. But that even this guy is coming out and saying, okay, we need to have a debate about decriminalization of drugs, and we have to stop punishing the drug user. I mean, imagine if that was ever said in Washington. Well, it's being said in the national capitals here south of the border. And more, you see, there's a lot of activity, for example, right now in Argentina, where the new president, President Néstor Kirchner, has appointed as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court a guy who's a long-time, very forceful, articulate advocate for all-out legalization of drugs. And actually, as a judge, was the author of the decision that repealed the punishment for marijuana users. So you have that going on in Argentina. You have all these public officials trying to do something like this in Brazil. You have the coca growers, and Evo Morales is the second biggest force in Bolivia. We ran part one of an interview last week on Narco News. We'll run part two this week of our Bogota, Colombia correspondent, Laura del Castillo, who interviewed a Colombian congressman speaking in favor of legalization of drugs. The issue is coming out of the closet, and it's really exciting and heartening to see that finally people are speaking. And I think one of the reasons people are speaking and beginning to say aloud what they've said only in whispers for years is that for the first time they know that their words will be reported in English, will be seen in the United States. We also report in Spanish and Portuguese to make sure that everyone in all the countries down here can see what's going on in their neighboring countries. And there's a movement. There's more coordination across country lines, across national lines. We're in touch with people in every single one of these countries. We have reporters on the ground there, and there's an effervescence. There's a kind of stirring up from the bottom happening, that's very much in harmony with the pro-democracy movements in these countries, where authentic democracy is starting to be born, where voter turnout is closer to 100% than it is to 50%. You don't see that in the United States, where people think elections don't matter anyway. But people are beginning to do this through the democratic systems. And that's why I'm very optimistic that Latin America, at some point, and we're going to be here to cover it, is going to make the big move as a united Latin American movement to stand up to the impositions of a country that talks about democracy, but obviously doesn't believe in it if it's trying to impose policies on other countries.
Al, that's wonderful. I think we've done it here. I appreciate you joining us here on Cultural Baggage.
Well, thank you. Your show is getting better and better known. I hear about it everywhere. I see lots of references to it on the Internet. I see regular updates over at the Drug Policy Alliance about it, and I think you're doing one hell of a job. You can always count on us here at Narco News as we count on you. Thanks to your listeners.
A quick program note. Tomorrow night, I'll be on the Access TV show Drugs, Crime, and Politics at 6:30. And now for the Hero of the Week. In recognition of their outstanding achievements in the field of drug reform, Cultural Baggage is proud to announce the Hero of the Week. This week I've chosen a man who has just finished a successful tour of the major cities of Canada, smoking in front of the police station in each city, for standing so tall, so bravely, for the rights of medical and recreational marijuana. I choose the Prince of Pot, Mark Emery, as this week's Hero of the Week. Where did the drug war start? Where did it begin? I want to say this, that throughout 1971, Nixon kept up the drumbeat. He said, "I want a goddamn strong statement on marijuana." He told his high-level White House Lieutenant Bob Haldeman. I mean one that just tears the ass out of them. All-out war. The next day, the Schaefer Commission returned its report on marijuana, and to the president's chagrin, not only did they refuse to declare war on marijuana, they recommended decriminalization. Now, on a positive note, the Drug Truth Network is growing. This week, WVJW in Benwood, West Virginia, begins broadcasting Cultural Baggage Saturdays at 1 p.m. They're also airing the War of Eternity special on Thursday at 1 p.m. KDUR in Durango, Colorado, will air the 420 Drug War News 6 days a week. I want you to keep in mind that you can make a difference.
Because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.